blaming each other for certain things, but it appears to most people that the peace is sort of holding and more or less, and the info's a little bit sketchy. The captives that have come out, you can tell they're coached to say only good things about Hamas because there's still plenty of others still in there. And, you know, they don't want retaliation against them. So they try to make them, but if you've been in captive for a year and a half, I guarantee you there's issues, but they're just not bringing those up. And that's for, there's a purpose for that. Of course, we've had a new president for the last week and been an extremely active week on a lot of fronts. One of them is Israel. And President Trump has released some weapons that Congress had approved, but Biden had slow walked in there. And so he released those. Plenty of other agreements and quite a bit going. Right now, the latest thing is, and I said this 2 years ago, that Trump is pushing them to take the Palestinians that live in Gaza, which is nothing but a pile of rocks, essentially, and put some of them in Jordan and some of them in Egypt. And that's exactly what needs to happen, in my opinion, but nobody's asked me, but that's not a bad idea. Of course, Jordan and Egypt don't want them, and even though, especially in Jordan, there's already a lot, and Jordan's just saying that, look, we got a lot already, we don't want any more. It says there's strings attached. The only string is that Trump wants the war to end. He wants to stop the fighting. And, I mean, I read the article. I don't necessarily disagree with everything, but the strings are not heavy. It's got to do with just the fact that Trump wants them to stop the fighting. He clearly told them what he doesn't want is he does not want to spend his next 4 years dealing with that when he's got so many other issues he's planning to do. And of course, we got our own, with the fires in California and North Carolina and all the other domestic issues anyway. So he's going to get spread thin. But I can tell him, as you know, we all know, the Mideast has been in an uproar since Genesis 13 and previous. And it's going to stay that way. And so, we might as well figure out how to manage it a little bit because it's going to stay that way. We already sent U.S. people over there for this thing, but they're not servicemen. They're security contractors, and they are trying to make sure that none of the Palestinians get back into Israel and so forth. They're overseeing the corridors. I don't know who's paying these guys, probably us. That wasn't said. I wonder, but they're contractors, military contractors. The other thing Trump did, the Houthi rebels, so this is their real name here, this Ansar name, and they're in Yemen, on the far side of the Arabian Peninsula, and so when a ship comes through the Red Sea, Suez Canal, they're getting rockets fired at them. Unless you're a Russian ship or Iranian ship or an oil ship from the Mideast. Otherwise, American ships, Chinese ships, unless they're China is paying them off, but they're getting bombed. At one time, 15 to 20% of the world's goods pass through that channel. And, of course, now it's greatly changed. It's costing. One of the reasons things are costing more is because of that. Trump had designated the Houthis as a terrorist organization because they just firing rockets into Israel. They're firing rockets at these ships and so forth. Biden took that off them, said, no, they're not terrorists, and so forth. So Trump put it back on this week, said, yeah, that's what I call a terrorist. They're terrorists. And so they're back, at least back on the list, which means we can do certain sanctions and so forth. I didn't say much, not going to say much about the World Economic Forum. I will say Trump gave a speech there. Last time when Trump was president and he went over there, basically they laughed at him. He told them, especially he gathered up the European guys and said, you guys, this is before the Russian war, he said, you guys had better quit depending on Putin for all your energy. That's not a good way to, and they laughed at him. I think I've still got the video, but you can find it. They laughed at him. And about a year later, they had no energy from Putin, and they weren't laughing. So this time when he went, they took him a lot more seriously, and nobody laughed at him, showed him some respect, and so forth. I think this term is going to be a lot different term. I'm not trying to make a political statement. But one thing you said there that, and the reason I bring these up is all of this stuff is I feel like it's prophetically related, everything I try to say. And this world crypto thing is prophetically related. When the Antichrist says, you can go to Revelation 13, that he's going to control everything that is bought and sold. We've always wondered, how in the world could that happen? Well, it can happen if everybody's using the same one and it's digital. It can happen. And of course, when one of the things Trump said is he's going to make the U.S. the world crypto capital. And I wouldn't doubt it. I would say this, too, because a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to use crypto. But before we say that, you know, because it's hard to understand even what it is and that kind of thing. But before we say that, I will say this. When it was all cash 100 years ago, all cash, and somebody decided you can just write a check on a piece of paper and that will move your money, I bet you some people said, I'm not going to use those paper. That's not an American dollar, you know, a check. And then I do remember when we moved to plastic, people said, I'm not doing that. And now today you move money with, plastic or your phone or your computer all the time. And people who use less and less checks. Do you remember when the bank used to mail you your checks? You know, and you get that big thing. Some people still do, but by and large, you know, it's a picture at best, or they just say, if you want them, go online and look at them, you know. And so I wouldn't say, you know, it depends on how this thing develops before the tribulation starts. I wouldn't say that we won't all be using it. Because that may be the only way we can buy or sell. I wouldn't say now that we're a long way from. I don't want to alarm anyone. We are a long, long way from not being able to use the American dollar. Long way from that. And so, to see this coming, it just tells us, I think, how close we are. I'm more worried about something else. And that's artificial intelligence. Now, I'm not actually laying awake at night worried because, the Lord didn't give us a spirit of fear, did he? And the Lord's got it all under control. He told us how this was going to work out. But the other thing that our president mentioned, in addition to being the world capital of crypto, was the capital of artificial intelligence. This guy here, He's the founder of Oracle, which is one of the groups that has developed artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is probably all of you know, but it's a computer basically that speaks to you. And what they are claiming, of course, is that this computer will you're going to hear the word generative. Are generative, if you will, is going to generate new thoughts. So far, we are not there. The computer is really not thinking. It's just that it takes facts that are given to it, and it can synthesize those facts much faster than we can and put them out there. You know, if you're looking for something on the internet, you can ask the computer. Certain AI, and it'll give AI platforms, and they'll give you the answer in a second or two. Whereas if you look for it, it might take you an hour or two. It might take you a lot longer than that. That's where we are now. So it is not generating new thought, and people say it is. But this one is worrying me, not worrying me, but if you were going to worry about something, this guy said, look, after we get all of the AI infrastructure in place, citizens will be on their best behavior. Because we will have everything in the world looked at. And, that's part of the game here, right? So, again, if we're getting the end times, the Antichrist is going to control everything. You know, he wants to know everything, right? And it, the Bible clearly says, you know, he's going to control what is bought and sold. And this guy says, look, everybody will be on their best behavior. Well, that's not the way it reads, is it? No, that's not the way it reads. I don't really see that the wars decrease when all in the end times. It actually increases. So he's incorrect about that, but I don't look forward to that day when that happens. But they're already talking about it, and it's we're going to have to see how it goes. Let's move on. Don't get too depressed here. You've heard of the Abraham Accords. Abraham Accords is when people make peace with Israel. Primarily, that's been Arabs, countries in the region of the Arabic Peninsula, Arabian Peninsula, as well as the northern African regions and so forth. The Cyrus Accords are when people that are, well, specifically it's about Iran making peace with Israel. And Iran right now is badly damaged, badly, and really weak. Got, you know, I mean, all of the armies that they had fighting Israel are under attack or really hurt. Syria fell. They invested billions there. Israel has hit them in some places where they hurt, and they're very, very weak. I'm not saying that Iran is going to go back. They're not the ones saying we want peace. I think what's going to happen is Israel's going to take advantage of this situation, probably attack them even. I wouldn't say that for sure, but that is where that's the reports you're getting. The guy who said this is who's known as the Crown Prince of Iran, and he is living in the U.S. But he is the son of the Shah of Iran. So the Shah in the late 70s, back then Iran was an ally of the U.S. Not maybe not an ally, but we were basically on good terms. We were on very good terms, in fact, with the Shah. And of course, he got outed, and since then, you know, for the last 45 years or longer, Iran has been a great enemy to Israel and also the U.S. So this guy wants to go back to the days of his father when we were friendly. I don't know how much power he's got, he has none right now. He's living in the U.S., but he's trying to probably pull some strings and see what he can do. We'll keep an eye on this guy. Interesting guy. So he's the son of Shah of Iran. I thought I would throw this out at you. I what did I do with my pointer? I circled it. And yeah, he's the guy that was at Reese Air Force Base over here. He came over. Actually, when I was in college at Tech, he was here. And he wasn't here for very long, but he was here, and yeah, so for what that's worth, maybe nothing, but I just thought that's a free tidbit that I thought I'd give him. But we should keep our eye on Iran. This was taken a few months ago in October of 2024 at the BRICS conference, Putin and the president, a new president of Iran, and so you can see how Iran lines up, so I would say let's not forget that. Just a couple more before we get into the lesson. I want to just talk about Russia and Ukraine just for a second. Of course, Russia lost billions of dollars on the fall of Syria. They had invested heavily in that region, and they lost all that, and they're getting back out. And the question is, what does it mean? One thing is, Russia had one port in the Mediterranean. They got quite a bit in the Black Sea and so forth. One port in the Mediterranean, and they lost the lease on that port. Syria canceled that lease. Not a surprise after it falling, but this is a report that basically says, you know, the new government has canceled that lease. Also, some articles from Newsweek that basically said the same thing. The warm water port that Russia wanted and has had all these years. In a place where they got a lot of their submarine, a lot of their technology, they're having to leave all that. And so this thing was a big, big blow to Russia. Also, Syria has banned trading with Russia and Iran. That's really not a surprise. Both of them were heavily invested with Assad, and of course the rebels have defeated Assad. Not a big surprise. The surprise to me on this report was that they also banned trade with Israel. And I, you know, Israel's right next to them. And so I was a little bit surprised to see that, not sure why they would do that, except that Ukraine came in there, and they're trying to make a deal with Syria to do trading with them. And that will be an interesting development if that happens. And I don't know that it'll happen, but we'll see. Well, this is a map of the Mideast. So right now, I'm gonna next week or the week after, I'm going to talk to you about the fact that the Mideast has had a complete, over the last 20 or 25 years, and it's had a complete makeover. It happens kind of slow, you know, so people don't realize it. But in the last 10, it's really, you know, everything has really gone fast and completed. And I'll talk to you about what I mean there right now. But right now, one of the points is here's Syria that fell. They don't want to do business with Israel. They don't want to do business with Iran. And, of course, here's Russia. They don't want to do business with them. And Russia has got their hands full with their own war. But Ukraine's trying to step in here. But the real point is Turkey is the one that Syria is working with. And so this is quite a stronghold, and you've got a strong group here. Saudi Arabia is strong. You've got kind of a north-south lineup here, and the Bible prophesies of many north and south wars. We talked about this when we were in Genesis 14 also, and we said that's a picture of the first north and south war, and it is. Daniel 11 talks about a war between the king of the north and the king of the south. And that is also what is setting up for the end time. And Israel's going to get caught up in that. And so that is setting up right now. I'll talk about that with a few more details as we kind of go forward. One of my slides may have... John, I don't know what happened there. Can you put me back in business, please? Maybe we have to start over. While we're doing that, turn over to Genesis chapter 20. We've been through, I'm going to just give a brief review, and when we finish Genesis, or at some point, I'll for those that want it, I'll give you this outline, but it's a little bit, you can kind of think of it, of what we've been through so far, and I'm just going to quickly go through here a couple of minutes before we cover our chapter for today. First two chapters of the book of Genesis, so the chapter numbers are over in the right, and the outline is kind of over in the left. On my slide, those numbers are lined up, but something got in this machine and kind of jumbled some things up, I guess. But anyway, first two chapters in the book, in the Bible, and in Genesis are about the creation. In chapter 3, we have the fall of man. That's where everything changed, wasn't it? Also in chapter 3, in that same time frame, God promised a redeemer. A prophecy that is so important for us today as Jesus was prophesied in chapter 3. Then the next three chapters from chapter 4 to 6, there's some early generations given, some early information, as well as the whole story of Noah and the flood. And then chapters... So that's chapters 4 through 8. Then 9 and 10, we got the new generation after the flood. Everybody came, all of us came from either Shem, Ham, or Japheth, didn't we? Yeah, that's everybody, all of us can point our lineage back to one of those three, and we talked about that. Won't take time to reteach it today. The next chapter, chapter 11, was the Tower of Babel. And, of course, that's where God divided the nations based on languages. And so right after that, you have the chapter on the generations it's actually chapter 10, the previous, on the generations and how everything was divided. And we talked about that as well. Chapter 12, very important, pivotal chapter in the Word of God on the call of Abraham. Abraham, God said, I'm going to make of you a chosen nation. And, of course, that's the nation of Israel that we're talking about right now. In that chapter, and one of the reasons I wanted to go over that review, is we talked about, in that same chapter, after Abraham had gotten a call and he went down there to Canaan, there was a famine in the land, and he went down to Egypt. Went on to Egypt, supposed to be in the promised land, went to Egypt. Many things happened down there, all bad. One of them is, when he got there, he had made a deal with his wife and said, "You tell them that I'm your brother and you're my sister. Because if I tell them that I'm your husband, they're going to kill me. And so if they take you, that's okay. But just don't let them take me." I mean, that's basically what he said. Ladies, we talked about that's not really a good thing, is it? You didn't. It wasn't. When it all broke loose, the king found out about it, and it was bad. And Abram at the time, he had to come back, and he came back really dejected and disheartened because he had made a big mistake. Also, he brought this maid with him named Hagar back. And, of course, that led to the whole thing there, which we'll talk about, and we'll continue to talk about a little bit. All that in chapter 12. As we go on, then we talk about the first Mideast conflict. Abraham got so rich, and Lot was so rich that their herdsmen got to fighting with each other, and it's a picture of what? Israel fighting with who? The descendants of Lot, Moab and Ammon, which are Jordan. And so it's kind of a regional conflict or intra-regional conflict, Israel fighting with its neighbors. The next chapter is the kind of a north-south war when the kings of the north came down upon the kings of the south, and Abraham had to get involved with that when he rescued Lot. And so all that we've covered. Then we did have the birth of Ishmael. That was by Hagar. God had promised Abraham, "You'll have a seed," and it wasn't happening. And so Sarah and Abraham cooked up their own thing. Here comes Ishmael. The problem is, Ishmael, the Bible tells us, was going to be a wild man and was going to be that forever. The Bible also said that he was going to live among his brethren, and that has also prophesied and has come true. Remember that Hagar despised Sarah after that. We talked about that. And so it's a picture once again of Ishmael's people despising Israel. And so we see that as we go, and that happened as well. God comes in and renews the covenant and basically tells Abraham as God goes on his way to Sodom, he says, no, Sarah is going to have a child. And Abraham was blown away. Sarah was blown away by that. But God, he meant what he said right there. We haven't got there yet, but of course that will happen. And then we talked about last time where the angels go ahead and go over to Sodom and the destruction and all that and of all those cities there in that region. We talked about that. That catches us up. We'll say a little bit more about some of those things as we go forward, but I wanted to give that lesson. This is the slide that was missing, and here it shows up. So this just came out. I was supposed to be in the other. Maybe I had it out of place, but I stuck it in there late. Will there be peace in the Middle East? So this is a fairly reputable survey company. Having been through some elections now, none of us trust any polls or anything else. But this is not about what's right. This is about what you think. So they asked 20-something thousand people, like about 22 or 23,000 people in many countries, will there be peace in the Middle East? So there's several countries. I know you probably can't see them. At the top is India and China. Here is the average response right here. Will there be peace in the Middle East? India, most of India says yes. China says 50-50. And from there, it sort of goes down. So the red is unlikely, and the green is, yes, likely. And these guys in the middle, they don't know. The U.S. is in here about right here, just about average. 19% yes, 16% don't know. Most everybody thinks there will not be peace. On the average, 22% said yes, 16% was unsure, 62% said no. The 62% are correct long term. I mean, we know how it goes. I don't know now. There may be peace for a few years. You know, there's been times when we've gone over there, right, and was generally okay. And there, so there can be times of peace and times of war, but we know that this whole time period of some of these wars that we see with Ezekiel 38 and 39, Daniel 11, Armageddon even. I mean, there's not going to be any long-term peace, but I don't know if any of you are called on that, but they called a lot of people, I guess, and we'll see. That's what the world thinks, so I just throw that in. Now let's get to Genesis 20. I titled that an early interaction with Hamas. Early interaction with Hamas, and we'll see that even in the first verse. Genesis chapter 20, verse 1, Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. So Abraham is a herdsman. He ended up, you know, even though the land was promised to him, he ended up owning very little. He bought a little burying plot for his wife, and several of the patriarchs are buried there, and you can it's in control of the Arabs, but in that whole area. But you can we can go there if you want to. This right here is Gerar, and so this is the Dead Sea. This is the Mediterranean Sea. This is Israel. Gerar's here, the land of the Philistines. So he's living next to the Philistines. So he's just a herdsman. He's not really out of his territory. He's still in Israel, but he gets awfully close. He's down there to the Philistines. And by the way, this map has got the Edomites on there. The Edomites haven't, at this point, in our chapter 20, the Edomites are not in existence yet, because that's the descendants of Esau, and he's not, in our progress through Genesis, he hasn't been born yet. I call this an early interaction with Hamas. He's actually going to deal with the king of the Philistines. And we'll see that in just a moment, Abimelech. But just to let you know, this is from Genesis 10, the sons of Ham, and he lists the sons here of Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Then verse 13 so this is one of the kids, Mizraim is one of the sons of Ham. And here's his boys right here. List about four of them, and there's number five. There's number six, Casluhim, out of whom, the Bible just gives us a little parenthesis about him, out of whom came Philistim, or the Philistines. So when we say Philistine, we're talking about Ham. Now, today we don't have somebody called Ham, do we? What do we have? What are the Philistines called? Well, the Philistines are called Hamas. Almost Ham, H-A-M-A-S, almost Ham. That, so when you see the Philistines, and we'll see this a little bit later, I've got a study I'm going to bring as soon as we get to three or four more chapters here, a few chapters down the way. I'm going to bring a study in that'll be, I think, quite interesting on the Edomites and Hamas and Hezbollah and so forth, where they came from. But the group that is in Gaza at this time is the Philistines. And right here, that's the Philistines. Descendants, according to Genesis chapter 10, they're descendants of Ham. We call them today almost Ham, but Hamas. So let's get on with our story. So let's keep going. I'm going to just keep it right there. Verse 2. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So he pulled that. Ladies, he did it again. He gets down there, and the king because Abraham's not just by himself. He's got his whole entourage. He's very rich. Cattle, servants, you know, all that. He's got a lot of people. And he gets down there with his whole thing because he's grazing. He's kind of following where the grass is. And he gets down there and he meets up with this king of the Philistines, the king of Gerar, it says, but that's where he is, and the area of the Philistines. And he doesn't say she's my wife. He says she's my sister again. And we're going to see it works out exactly the same as last time. So the king, he takes Sarah, he thinks is Abraham's sister, not his wife, and he takes it and he grabs her for his wife. Now, I just was thinking about that one day, and I don't really have time to develop it too much, but the day he came and got her, I mean, the goodbye hug between him and Abraham, I mean, did they think about that? I don't know, but and then the king might have done it because, you know, here comes this big, powerful group, and if he takes the sister of the leader, Abraham, well, you know, one day he might, in fact, want to take over that whole group. That's probably his ambition. And so that's, you know, why he did it. We're going to find out later, and God will acknowledge he didn't know what he was doing, but Abraham and Sarah certainly knew what they were doing. By the way, for what it's worth, this is free. She's 90 years old. She's 90 years old, and the king of Philistines took a look at her and took her. Now, when God said, I'm going to just use one of our words for that, rejuvenate Sarah so she can have a child, that's what he did. And it didn't matter if she was 90 years old. And so she's still appealing to this pagan Philistine king. This is a... So when Satan brought in Ishmael, or Hagar, to have Ishmael, it was Satan trying to say, no, I'm going to put my man in here, not Isaac, not God's man. I want my man, Ishmael, the wild man, to be in this lineage. It was Satan trying to mess up, because why? Abraham's lineage was going to be what? The one that God was going to keep pure is the lineage of Jesus Christ. The lineage of the Messiah that would, of course, cleanse and redeem us, you see. And God had a plan for that, and Satan was trying to mess that up. This is not just the second. I could have showed you many times where Satan has tried to put a monkey wrench in things, and here's another one. And so God had just said two chapters ago, Sarah, you're going to have a child. And so what did Satan do? He took Sarah out of the picture, didn't he? He took Sarah out of the picture because he's trying to make sure that Isaac doesn't get born, because he wants to mess that thing up. And so he wanted to separate them. That's really a little bit of the spiritually what's going on. Verse 3, but God. Now, there are several times in the Bible will give us an event that happened and we're thinking this is bad. And then the Bible come in and say what? But God. When you see that, you know God steps in, and he's going to step in. God is going to step in violently here. God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. God comes to the guy and says, buddy, you're dead. By now, some time had passed, and what has happened, look at verse 17. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. The whole area was something. God hit them with something, some kind of disease, and the womb, they couldn't have children. But it happened not only to the ladies, but it happened to his servants as well. And, the maidservants, Abimelech, his wife, God had put something on them, you see. And Abimelech, when God told him in verse 3, you're a dead man, he knew he was. It had already hit. So we see a little time, because it would take some time to know that, okay, we're not able to have children. My whole kingdom is going to be gone here. So Abimelech, verse 4, but Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he, not unto me, she's my sister. And she even herself said, he's my brother, and in the integrity of my heart and the innocency of my hands have I done this. And the Lord said to him in a dream, yea, I know that thou did this in the integrity of thine heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me, therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. Interesting exchange here. The king says to God, God, I did not know she was Abraham's wife. I thought she was his sister. That's what he told me. That's what she told me. What am I supposed to do? And God said, I know it. I know it. And in fact, I withheld you from being able to touch her. Now, God's given all of us a free will. We can do what we want to do, but God is a sovereign God. So there's a free will and there's a sovereignty of God. There's also times in all of that where God will act directly on something. And here he acted directly to make sure that lineage from Abraham to Jesus Christ and beyond was like he wanted it. And so God was acting on all that and was active during this time. God said, look, it wasn't going to happen because I didn't let it happen. Now, God, verse 7, now therefore restore the man his wife, for he's a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. If thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. One thing we find here is that Abraham is a prophet. You need to restore her, for in fact, he's a prophet. That's the reason he said, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. You don't restore, you're going to die. I just pulled up that verse because it reminded me of that, where the Bible, where Psalm says, saying, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. Well, Abimelech got the lesson, didn't he? He rises up early in the morning, verse 8, called all his servants, told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? What have I offended thee? Thou hast brought on me and my kingdom a great sin. Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not be done. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what sayest thou that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God's not in this place, and they'll slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She's a daughter, she's a half-sister. He's basically saying, I only told you half a lie. The lie was only half a lie here. She's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. She became my wife. Some people call that half-truth. But if it's half-truth, it's what? Half-lie. So I've already read verse 13 where he'd made the deal with Sarah. Anytime this happens, we're gonna run this. Well, Abimelech took sheep and oxen, men servants, women servants, gave them unto Abraham and restored Sarah, his wife. And Abimelech says, behold, my land is before thee, dwell where it pleaseth thee. And unto Sarah he said, behold, I've given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all other. And she was reproved. She was also reproved there is kind of a reprimand. So Abimelech goes and he gives them gifts. And he gave... He went up to, and he'd already chewed Abraham out for it. Then he goes to Sarah, and he lets her have it as well. The Bible says she was reproved. She was reprimanded by him. And he says to her, I've given Abraham 1,000 pieces of silver. Now, and he is the covering for you. In other words, you know, you need to go back and live under the cover of your marriage with Abraham. I've given you gifts now, and we're done with my situation and with your situation. So Abraham, verse 17, prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they had children. I already read the verse 18. I just want to get to this, and I'm going to close. I know I'm out of time. Is it interesting to you that he wasn't healed until Abraham prayed for him? That's kind of... Because God could have just healed him, said, I'm going to go ahead and, all right, I see that you've already, you know, done it. You give him 1,000 and I'm going to heal you. But God told him, I'm going to have Abraham pray for you. God was trying to tell Abimelech, look, there's a way we do things, and you ask God for things, and I will, my will be done, and I'm not going to listen, you know, Abimelech, I'm not going to listen to you. If Abraham prays for you because he's one of mine, I'll listen to him and I'll restore you. What if Abraham had not prayed for him? Have you ever thought about that? What if Abraham said, look, the guy just chewed my wife out. I'm not very happy with him. No, but Abraham didn't have that attitude. He prayed for him. It just reminds me of these verses right here. I just want to go back to Job for a second as I close. We all know the story of Job. He was the richest man in the East, and he lost everything because God allowed Satan to destroy him. Not kill him, but destroy his health, lose all his family and so forth, not his wife, but his kids and all his possessions and so forth. Three of his friends show up, and most of the whole book is about those three friends in kind of an exchange with Job, as basically they just blast Job, tell him he's a sinful man and it's all his fault and so forth. And God shows up on the scene, and God is mad at who? Those three friends. He's upset at them. And God says in this verse, you see where I've underlined it there, look, I'm at it with you three. But what I'm going to do, if you want to be restored to me, is I'm going to get Job to pray for you. That's what it says. I'm going to get Job, for him will I accept. I'm going to get Job to pray for you. It tells you a little bit about the importance of prayer and the power of prayer, doesn't it? Now I want to show you this last verse. Job had nothing at this time. The Bible says this, the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friend. And God gave him twice as much as he had before. So what if Job had said, look, God, for months now, these guys have been blasting me, and I'm not doing it. I'm not praying for them. I can't pray for them. I don't like them. I'm mad at them, and I'm not doing it. Job would have sat there in the ashes. You look at those houses in California that are just smoke coming up, and they're just ashes. Just picture Job sitting right in the middle of that, scraping himself with a broken piece of pot where he's itching. That was Job. He would still have been there if he hadn't prayed for his friends. Still been it. God didn't turn his captivity until he was obedient and prayed for his friends. That's just sobering. And Abraham, he had to pray for Abimelech, you know. The Bible says in Romans 12, be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. That's a lesson God was trying to teach them. Overcome evil with good. And so that's what God instructed Abraham to do. It's good for our instruction as well. We'll continue on next week. Let's pray. Our Father, we're thankful for this time we have together. We're thankful for your word. We're thankful for the lesson.